this is The Pastor's Heart. And I wonder if you could help us get the word out about The Pastor's Heart. If you have an iPhone or an iPad, we'd love you to subscribe using this URL, bit.ly/thepastorsapple. And we'd love it if you could give us a rating in the iTunes store, make some sort of review as well. If you've got an Android device, the URL to subscribe to is bit.ly/thepastorsandroid. If you're on Spotify and listen to podcasts on Spotify, then just type into your browser bit.ly/thepastorsspotify. And finally, if you're somebody who subscribes on YouTube, then it's bit.ly/thepastorsyoutube. And look, if you'd like to support us in this ministry, and we would really appreciate that. There are production costs, streaming costs, promotion costs. And if you are benefiting and would like to chip in perhaps a few dollars a month, then that would be wonderful. And the URL to do that is called bit.ly/thepastorspatreon. That's how we're doing those things. Now, coming up over the next few weeks, we're going to be talking to David Cook next week, former principal of Sydney Missionary and Bible College. He's going to be speaking to us about how to preach to the heart. Keith and Sarah Condy are coming in to talk about the pastor's marriage and their new marriage course that's just about to be released. Valerie Ling is going to be here to talk about stress and burnout. Rory Shiner is going to be our guest. He's going to be over here in Sydney from Perth for the launch a whole Donald Robinson project that he's been working on, and we'll be talking to him about that. Mark Deaver's coming in, Steve Cree, Kanishka Rafael, they're just some of the guests over the next few weeks on The Pastor's Heart. But today, our guest is Andrew Barry, and welcome, Andrew. Andrew is married to Ruth, the father of five, and on the staff at Janelli Anglican Church, mm-hmm. and going to be speaking on the Nexus Conference a couple of weeks next month on evangelism and the Spirit. Tell us about that.
Well, it's very exciting, actually. I feel like I'm not anything amazing. I'm not a great evangelist, but I tell you the one thing that I'm relying on everything is that God who opens doors and God who opens hearts, and I've seen him doing a lot of that recently, so I'm very encouraged to be there.
Great. We're looking forward to that. Now, 2 years ago, your son Nathan died, and I'm going to ask you to share some of the things you've learned, some of the journey that you've been on with God and your family's been on with God. But just can you orientate us, tell us some of the story before that, leading up to his death, the initial cancer diagnosis, that kind of thing.
Sure. Yeah. Nathan, wonderful boy. He's my second oldest boy, into sport, into very good at reading people. But in 2016, he had headaches, which we found was brain cancer, and we found there was cancers throughout his body. It was something that was very, very serious, and we treated. But a year later, many people prayed for him. We were supported massively, but he died 2 years ago, on the 12th of January in 2017. And so, as you can imagine, actually, we were going on a holiday. Mm-hmm. It was going to be like, we didn't call it our last holiday because we didn't know if it was our last, but it was pretty hard driving away on holiday and then driving back with one less child.
Yeah. Then the 2 years since then, it's been a complex journey. Yeah.
Sure.
Tell us some of that.
I think there's a few things. It's a bit, there's obviously things that happen to you. Things come in waves. I heard someone say it was a bit like when you're at the beach, you brace yourself for the next wave to come and you can handle it. But sometimes another wave comes when you're not bracing yourself and you get knocked out a bit. And so I think there's been just different seasons in the last 2 years. God has been incredibly good to us. We've been surrounded by love, by prayer, by really kind acts of people towards us, and he's been with us the whole way through, but it's been hard.
I'm imagining you've learnt and you've felt every stage, every wave of the grief cycles that they talk about. Mm. Maybe just in terms of shaping how we go. Mm. Shock was the first one.
Yeah. One of the things I read, Dominic, was given a book about the stages of grief, and the book was very helpful, actually. It reminded me to think that every stage of grief is an opportunity for you to it's a gift from God, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an opportunity for you to grow closer to God, or an opportunity for you to go away. And so, like the shock at the beginning, you kind of have to do so many things, make so many decisions, and you sort of have an energy just to get things done, to organize a burial service for my son with my family and some of Nathan's closest school friends, and then organize a huge Thanksgiving service with 1,000 people. And that shock, God gives you some strength, but then you're just totally wrecked afterwards, yeah. And then the other stages of grief come, things like, I think, isolation and loneliness, you know, reach a point where everyone else has kind of
emotionally moved on.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, often it's the case that the funeral, for some people, is the end of their grieving, but for the family, it's quite honestly only the beginning, and it's not their fault, and I've moved on with other people who have grieved, and they're still grieving, but there's a loneliness, and so I think one of the things I've been reminded of is, at that loneliness, I can either choose to draw closer to God, or I can withdraw from everyone. And I think that's been really good for us in terms of just drawing closer to God in our prayers. And
well, take us through one of those moments when you thought, wow, I mean, I do really feel isolated, or I do really feel down or lonely. Yeah.
Oh, there's been many, Dominic. Sometimes it happens all at once. I mean, it's, you know, quite honestly, on the anniversaries of things, we brace ourselves for those, but then I've actually found the hardest days usually the day after. So everyone's praying for you. You're saying, how are you going to get through this first year anniversary since Nathan's gone to be with the Lord Jesus Christ? And the day after is harder because it's not an anniversary and we've done a year. It's just hard. So I think it's at those moments that you just call to pray more and call to rely on God more. But also the temptation is to withdraw from other people. And I've done that, and I think I've made mistakes in my family. Sometimes I've just wanted to switch off, listen to podcasts. No, but not wholly good podcasts like this, but other podcasts, Dominic. But withdrawing from family, withdrawing from other people, there's an unhealthiness about that. And if my wife was on, she could proclaim that I've been unhealthy in that withdrawing. But also, there's a sense of drawing closer to God, and then drawing to other people too. Yeah.
You told me about the word bargaining that people have used in the grief stage. What did you mean by that?
Well, it's one of the stages of grief is bargaining and asking God. Actually, to be honest, I haven't ever hit that one. I don't know why. I must admit that sometimes I look at a photo of Nathan and I'll say sorry, and I just say it. I don't know if I'm saying it to Nathan or just about myself. I think, oh man, so many things I could have done. But, it's not so much bargaining, excuse me.
Anger?
Anger. I don't know. I don't think I've been angry at God. I have been certainly poured out my heart to God. I know other people have been angry at God. But if I did become angry, I think what I should do with it is like the psalmists do and just... and bring it to the throne of grace and deal with it that way, yeah.
Mm. How has counselling helped?
Yeah, I actually saw a Christian counsellor midway through last year, and it was very, very helpful. I'd actually only ever gone to see a counsellor once before, Dominic, and maybe I shouldn't say this, but one time, a long time ago, I went to see a counsellor who wasn't a Christian, and... the counsellor said to me, you've got to see yourself more as a God than a human. And I thought, I'm a Christian, I'm not God. And so I hadn't seen counselling since then. But
had understood that it'd been useful for other people.
Well, not that counsellor and advice.
Not that counsellor, yeah.
I knew it would be helpful, and I'd recommend many people to counselling. But I actually said, but this was very helpful. And Ruth gave me really good advice. My wife gave me really good advice to map a bit of time out after you see the counsellor, just to walk and process. And so it was one of those times, it was only halfway through last year, a year and a half after Nathan died, I first reached out for counselling. But one of the things that he helped me see, or I understood myself, is that there were sort of three things that I have these negative emotions were getting missed up. So I was sad and I was stressed, and sometimes I felt like a failure at things. And so I think sometimes when I was feeling sad about Nathan... and there's nothing wrong with that, I'd start to have all the stress and the feeling like a failure just pouring into me at once. Almost like all these negative emotions were messed together. And I think also when I was feeling stressed about things, like we had a couple weekends away, I was organizing 2 weekends and 2 weeks, you know, 2 weekends away, 2 weeks apart from each other. And I think when I was feeling stressed, suddenly the waves of sorrow came into that.
Came in, yeah.
And so I think one of the things I found very helpful, and I hope it's helpful to someone out there listening, is that separate those things. It's okay. Let sorrow be sorrow. Just be sad, and that's fine. In fact, do something with it. Someone said, if you get waves of sorrow, what you should do is pull out a photo. Don't suppress it.
Mm-hmm.
Embrace it. Pull out a photo. Reminisce, think. But let the sorrow be sorrow, and don't let it turn to, you know, the other things, like you feel like a failure or other things. But I found that very helpful, and I would recommend, yeah, speaking to someone about that, and particularly thinking, don't let your negative emotions all become blended together, because God's given us all of them for a reason. I think, you know, sadness so that we can rightly mourn, stress rightly understood so we can just get things done, and you know, sometimes we do fail, but often it's off the radar because we're not understanding ourselves properly.
Have you gone as a father and a husband and looking after the others in your family who presumably in their different ways are going through the same kind of cycle? Yeah.
I think it's very important. One thing I miss that surprised me about Nathan was touch.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure other people miss that as well when they've lost someone. But I think I hug my boys more.
Mm-hmm.
I've always hugged my girl and I hug my little them when they're babies. But I think when your boys are 19 and 16 and 15,
you tend to, as an Australian,
you tend to not hug them. Yeah. And I think one of the things I've tried to do is just embrace them a lot more. And they've wanted that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's fantastic. Ruth and I had set up date nights that we tried to do as often as we could when Nathan was sick, and there have been seasons where we haven't kept that going, but that's been good for us. And I think just listening to each other. Ruth teaches me a lot about grieving. She talks about her, she puts on like a coat, that's how she describes it, or in a sense mentally she's all over the coat of the promises of God. And in the morning when she faces stuff, she puts that on, and there's promises about, you know, never will I leave you, never will I forsake you, promises about the place Christ has for us in heaven, promises for us about the things that Nathan deeply believed, which was that to live is Christ and to die is gain. And we've had to walk that together. I think these moments are potentials for people, because we all grieve differently, to pull apart a bit.
Mm. I mean, they do say that couples who've lost a child have a higher percentage of marriage breakdown.
I could understand that, and I would be pouring my heart out to anyone who's in that situation and say, well, the first thing you've got to do is love your wife,
mm-hmm.
and love your kids that are still with you. Yeah.
Mm. And the other kids, how's their journey been?
Look, they're all been different, and I think it's hit us all at different times.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a wonderful man in our church. He died a couple of weeks ago. And for some of the kids, that opened up grief again,
mm-hmm.
which is right and natural. And for others, there's been times where it's sort of, it's made them maybe be a bit stoic, a bit too stoic maybe.
Mm.
And in my family, you probably get the impression, even behind my stoic outside.
You're stoic outside.
I'm actually the one in my family who's probably the most emotional, Dominic. And but the kids, I want to give them permission to be emotional. And so the other day, one of my kids said, "Dad, I would like to talk to you about life and about Nathan, about the future." And so he made an appointment with me and just came to my office after school, and we talked and prayed, and it was really nice.
Mm.
Really nice. Yeah.
Mm. How's it impacted the ministry of Christ Jesus? You're on the staff at a busy church. You're responsible for a congregation.
Yeah.
Do you know, just 2 years, as you've looked back, what have been some of the, the hard things? What have been some of the joys? Yeah.
I think one of the things that I found that is that when I was going through, we're looking after Nathan for a year, and then the first bit of after he died, was my time frames were just different, Dominic. So it was all eternity, and all now. It was two time frames. I was just getting ready for heaven, and what are we going to get through today? Mm-hmm. And I think there's a lot of strength in that, because the gospel is about that. The gospel is about what opportunities does the Lord present you this very day, and how can you get ready for life forever with Christ? Mm-hmm. But I think one of the things that that I struggled with a little bit is planning a bit ahead.
Mm-hmm.
I think people who grieve or go through hard times find it hard to... I couldn't plan when Nathan was sick. I couldn't plan 3 months ahead. I didn't know what was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we planned a holiday, but it was just... didn't know that was going to be his last holiday. You know, you don't... we can't plan. And even in grief, I thought that would sort of instantly disappear.
Mm-hmm.
But I think for me, at least, I can't say for others, it took a while before that kind of 3, 6...
Mm.
2-year, 5-year planning could come back in again, which is really important for pastoral ministry.
Mm.
And I think for the last 6 months, it's kicked back in, and I'm really excited about where things are going at the moment. But on that hand, I don't want to lose the other perspective.
Mm. The eternity.
The eternity and right now.
Yeah.
You know, this is the day. We've got this time right now.
Mm.
And how do we prepare ourselves for eternity?
Mm.
But I've kept preaching. I preached. We had a couple of weeks. We've had some time off. I probably should have taken a bit more time off, but we kept going. And church people were very, very thankful for that. Like, very, very, sorry, very supportive of us in that.
You've talked actually about some people in grief people wanting to love them and say, don't want to put any pressure on them, and yet actually keeping themselves busy is good for them.
That's 100% true. I think one of the things we have this way of helping people, inverted commas, in grief, which is actually kind of makes them into the victim,
mm-hmm.
and makes them into a helpless person. And particularly someone who's involved in ministry, and they say they've just lost someone dear to them, and we just say, okay, you got to stop everything now for a while. But the question is, why? I actually think what you could say to someone is, look, I want to give you permission to stop mm-hmm. this, permission to stop that. I want to give you a break if you need it. That's a wonderful thing to say, but it's quite different to say to someone, you've got to stop, mm-hmm. instead of taking over and telling them what to do. Because I know people who've lost someone. I know someone who lost a husband, and she is just a ministry-minded person, and I could imagine that she needs to take some breaks and needs to take life easier, but she just wants to serve the Lord.
Mm.
And not as a therapy, so I don't think I do, I never want to do, or should encourage people to do ministry as a self-therapy, you know, mm-hmm. it's not just for your own sake.
It's got to be for other person.
It's for the other person, but it's the same as what you were doing before. So I just urge people just to be a bit careful. Instead of assuming that the person should stop everything, maybe talk to them. It's always a good start, isn't it, Dominic? And ask them, what would they like to do? Would they like to have a break? Do they need a break? Give them your support. Say, you know what? We are 100% behind you to back you with whatever you want. But we also want to give you permission if you need to stop. And that's what our church did to us, and I'm very grateful for that.
Mm. What opportunities for the Lord Jesus have come up?
There's been a lot. There was a friend who came, someone we didn't know, came to the Thanksgiving service of Nathan and then introduced ourselves to a family. And then earlier last year, we invited them along to an evangelist dinner. She became a Christian and started reading the Bible with Ruth. There's been opportunities for, there was opportunities. I got a strange one the other day where someone rang up on the phone, very distressed, wanted to speak to a minister, and
rang the church.
I didn't know this person. They wanted to speak to a minister, and I, you know, when you get those, you hear those on the answer machine, and you think, do I ring back? Do I wait till Monday? It's a Saturday. I've got Saturday church. I've got to finish my preparation. Sorry, guys out there, I was still a bit of my preparation. I was at a camp all week, so busy. But no one's
it's hypothetical.
But I had to do a bit of work. That person was so distressed. I rang them and they needed me to come and speak to them. And they were leaving the next day. And I went over that day, even though I had other things to do, because it was the right thing to do. I went over them And this person had just lost a child. Mm-hmm. And they'd lost a child 2 years and one day from the time I lost my child. They wanted to speak to a minister, and they didn't know they were getting a minister
who'd been through the same
who'd also
journey.
Lost a child and yeah. could read the Bible and pray and embrace them and can keep going with that and invite the church and other things. So there's strength. Like I think God prepares works for us to walk in. I believe that, you know, we're seated with Christ, we're secure with him, that's where we are in our position. But here on earth, he's got good works, and we are to walk in them all the time. And I think God's prepared good works for me to walk in, even in suffering. There's been many opportunities, Dominic.
You tell me about a really confronting moment when a friend of yours who you'd discipled in the past, who's also in ministry, and their son was sick with cancer, and you, having seen your son die, were called on to minister to him. Do you want to just kind of walk us through some
of
that?
So there's a lovely, lovely friend of mine, Pete and Mel, and they don't mind me saying that. Their son last year, January last year, so a year after Nathan had died, their son, they were here on holidays as missionaries overseas, come to Australia, and their son had had cancer, stage 4 cancer. And I knew them.
Mm-hmm.
Other people knew them, but I knew them, I loved them. And I went and visited them in the hospital. But it's a little bit, when you're going to visit someone in hospital who's just found out their kid has cancer, and you're the person whose child has died of cancer the year before, you feel a little bit like, do they want that? Don't they want someone who can be the walking embodiment of success, not the walking embodiment? That was going through my mind, Dominic. That's not always going through their mind. They just wanted to see me as a friend.
Mm-hmm.
And they want to read the Bible with them and pray with them, and which I did. And I still keep up with Pete. And in fact, we want to... The good news is his child has been treated, and it seems like everything is the cancer's gone.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're actually wanting to get together sometime. We catch up a lot. We want to get together sometime and have a night thinking about one of us has got a child who's had cancer and died. One of us has got a child who's had cancer and lived. And how we can help other people, and how Christians can help people with sick kids or kids who are dying. Yeah, so, but it's confronting. But I also know that I've, you know, this is what God wants me to do. He's prepared that good work for me to walk in. And often the good works he prepares us to walk in, it's like, it's more like the, you know, walking up the sand dunes of Cronulla Beach.
Mm-hmm.
It's good works, but it's hard works. See, I think when we think of good works God prepares us to walk in, it's like we think the good works is some stroll in the park, but actually they're often hard. But I think he calls us to do those things, and if we've had a particular thing in our life, maybe that's preparing us to help someone else as well.
You talked about an evangelism award at your school.
Tell
us that story.
It was only last week. I mean, I could tell you honestly 5 or 6 stories just from last week of unusual things. But last week, my father-in-law gave to school an evangelism award that was going to be in the name of Nathan, and I think it was given to a child. It was given to a child at the end of last year or the beginning of this year. But I don't think it had the name Nathan on the front of it, but it did inside the book. But anyway, what happened was my son went over to this guy's house and my son said, "Can I look at the thing?" And it said Nathan on it. And this boy who won the evangelism award at the school was told my son that he was converted in a sermon that someone else gave about a boy with cancer who'd survived, but they didn't know the name. He didn't mention the name. And so this boy became a Christian a couple of years ago through someone preaching, talking about my son Nathan, even though he didn't mention it. And he won an award, which he didn't realize was about my son Nathan. And yet it was, God had used my son Nathan to lead him to the Lord, among other things. And then this guy was preaching the gospel and won this evangelism award. And I'm sure there are many other aspects of his life, but I just found that really encouraging.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm. You talked to me about listening to sermons or reading books by other people who'd lost children.
Mm.
Why is that? Not particularly on grief topics, but why has that been an encouragement to you?
Yeah.
People who've walked that walk.
Yeah. It's interesting. I've actually not wanted to read many things on grief. I haven't read many things on grief, but I actually really wanted to read and listen to people who I know had been through a lot of suffering. It just, even though they didn't talk about it in their sermons, they didn't write about it in their books, you could see the love they had for Christ and for his mm-hmm. people, and you knew that they'd been tested in ways similar to me, and yet they still loved the Lord. And I just craved that. It was like a fellowship of people who've gone through some hard things and still love the Lord. I think that was heightened just after Nathan died. I don't crave as much, but I still do appreciate it. I think when someone goes through suffering, they don't want to just face up suffering all the time. You want to actually hear about heaven, about Christ, about the resurrection, about the cost of discipleship, all the regular things you want to hear. But we were given many books about grief, and I honestly confess that I only read one one book about grief, and the person who gave it to me wrote on the front of it, he says, if you feel like you don't want to read this, or it's inappropriate, or you can't, don't worry, don't bother reading it. And I think that's what made me read it. And I always write that on everything. I give someone who's grieving, I tell them, look, please don't read it. If you don't feel like you have to read it, like if you give someone a book on grieving, don't make it feel like a burden to them, because they might end up with 20 books on grieving and they won't have read them, and they don't want to have to face you and realize that they haven't read them. But realistically, you just can't.
You wrote a really helpful blog article on the anniversary of Nathan's death, and we'll link to it in the notes below. But just what have you learned from the scriptures that's helped you in this journey?
So I wrote an article about sorrow upon sorrow for parents who lose a child. There's a few things I learned. I looked at this is mainly the Old Testament, looked at the parents in the Bible who'd lost children, and many of them reacted differently. Mm-hmm. Many of them reacted strangely. You know, David lost at least 3 sons, more, but 3 that we're told the story of, and he reacts so differently each of them. You know, Absalom, he just breaks down. Absalom, Absalom. But then his other son, as a baby, he just seems to mourn beforehand and have no reaction afterwards. People react differently. But I think the biggest thing I learned was from the New Testament, that Paul, who said we should grieve but not as those without hope, mm-hmm. Wasn't a stoic, wasn't just believing that we have no emotions, because elsewhere he also prayed to God and hoped that Epaphroditus would never die in Philippians. And he said that if he was so glad that God answered that prayer, because he's been spared from sorrow upon sorrow. And I actually found putting those two things together really helpful, that we grieve, but we grieve with hope. I am not worried for Nathan. He's well off. He's with the Lord. I grieve for my wife. I grieve for my family. I grieve for me. It's Nathan's friends. But there is another aspect, that there is a reality that there is a sorrow upon sorrow. If someone dies. And I think the Bible is just honest, very honest about that. That's good.
There's been a wonderfully transformative work of the Spirit amongst some of Nathan's peers, some 16-year-old, year 10, year 11, you know, and they've all now, 2 years later, just finished school. But what's some of the work of the Spirit of God in that group? Yeah.
We had a moment last year. It was on close to Nathan's birthday, where a bunch of Nathan's friends wanted to come over, and they made a plaque, and they had a tree they wanted to plant, and I told them, and I could tell you and whoever's listening, before they came, it was hard. It was like re-bringing everything up again, to have that many, have a bunch of, it's just his school friends, maybe it was about 18-year-olds, 17, 18-year-olds, came over about, I think it was about 4 o'clock or something, and they all dug a hole for the tree, and then because 18 of them did it, the hole was way too big, so they all had to fill it in again. We prayed together, most of them are believers, but they stayed for about 4.5 hours at our house, and there was a time when I was sitting back with Ruth talking to some of them, and a group of Nathan's friends were on our piano and singing around the piano songs of praise to God, and I thought to myself, it's just such a strange thing and an overwhelming thing that God would bring into our lives some of Nathan's friends still. And these guys have been bold and come into our house and spent so long with us and, you know, brought food along. And we've had a couple just pop over at different times and talk about issues. One of the guys on that day showed us his testimony that he'd got baptized in his local Baptist church, and part of his testimony was
Nathan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Nathan facing sickness, Nathan facing death.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming and sharing with us today.
Thanks very much, Dominic.
My guest on The Pastor's Heart has been Andrew Barry, and Andrew, of course, on the staff at Jenali Anglican Church in the Sutherland Shire in the south of Sydney, and one of the keynote speakers at the Nexus Conference next month. We'll put the link to Andrew's blog, The Bible, A to Z, in the link below. And next week on The Pastor's Heart, our guest is going to be David Cook, the former principal of Sydney Missionary and Bible College, and of course the chairman of that Katoomba Christian Convention for 10, 15 years. And he'll be speaking with us about the whole topic of how do you preach to the heart. And we're looking forward to having him as our guest next week. Thanks for being with us this week on The Pastor's Heart. Hey, if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, we would love it if you could hop over to the Apple Podcasts app and give us a rating and review. That helps us in the rankings and lets other people discover The Pastor's Heart. And again, if you are able to help us out by being a financial partner, go to our Patreon link, patreon.com/thepastorsheart.